Legal Matters.
At 14 minutes after 8 o'clock now, the African National Congress lost a legal bid to stop the MK Party from using the name and logo of its former armed wing, Umkhonto weSizwe. The governing party had argued that Umkhonto weSizwe, the MK party headed by former President Jacob Zuma, had breached the trademark law. Yeah, but the Durban High Court disagreed, allowing the use of the name, which translates a spear of the nation. It is a significant victory for the MK party ahead of the 29th May general elections. And I'm really looking forward to this discussion. And it will, of course, be anchored by that particular story. But I think there is broader knowledge to be gleaned from Marius around the issue of the Trademark Act of 1993. And, of course, as amended in 1994, or 194 of 1993, I think it is, yeah? So I'm really looking forward to that conversation, and I hope that you can be a part of it on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Marius, thank you so much for joining us. Are you good?
Good evening, Aubrey. Nice to be back again.
Yeah.
I haven't been here for a while. It's, as always, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be part of your show, and a good evening also to all your listeners.
Indeed. So it was bit of a surprise, I think, for many in the African National Congress that the Durban High Court decided to award the case to the MK party, I suppose, because of historical reasons that we all know that the MK is traditionally the armed wing of the African National Congress. But I suppose through political sort of maneuvering, former President Jacob Zuma has had greater insight into the law, into trademarks law or Trademarks Act, and that's why he was able to retain the use of that particular logo for his party, the MK party. Tell us what was at play here from a legal point of view.
Thanks for that opportunity, Aubrey. I think being a lawyer, let's start with the bad news, which is always what we start with. Just kidding. I'm just going to quote a little bit, a little piece out of the court case, just to set the scene, to say that unfortunately, one of the questions, ideally, that I think a lot of listeners would have wanted answered, was unfortunately not answered in what is quite a complex judgment. The judge here said, it is perhaps appropriate, and this is quoting, to indicate at the outset what, in my view, this matter is not about. Much debate took place between the respective counsel as to which of the two parties could rightly claim the name Umkhonto weSizwe, and for that matter, the mark depicting the warrior with a shield and raised spear as its own. This, and then skipping a couple of paragraphs, and then the judge continues, this court is not the forum to settle a dispute where there are competing historical accounts of events which took place more than 60 years ago as to who may rightfully lay claim to the name Umkhonto weSizwe. That is an exercise best left to scholars, historians, and politicians. So the bad news for all the interested people, including myself, is unfortunately the court did not find it necessary in this particular instance to go into the detail and the background, for want of a better word, as to who is actually entitled to, if you want to call it the history, the legacy, whatever word you want to attribute it to. And that's why I said it's actually quite a technical judgment, in the sense of that the court tried to focus on the technical arguments that were presented to them, as opposed to sort of an overarching judgment stating with any degree of finality who owns the trademark at the end of the day going forward. That question, to a large extent, remains unanswered. My personal view is that it is probably likely to remain unanswered in the foreseeable future, i.e. between now and the election date, which is now 30-odd days away. I think this is a matter that will probably, the trademark matter will rage on, for want of a better word, long after the elections have come and gone. as to who's entitled to the marks. There's a variety of marks now on the register in the name of a variety of different entities. I know the ANC has filed a large number of trademarks towards the end of last year. I had a quick look. There's the mark that they took assignment from this entity called Legacy Projects. Whatever claim they may have legitimately to the mark is not clear from the judgment, if any.
Yeah.
I didn't have a chance to check before I left, but I presume that the MK party would also have filed their own trademark application. So that mess, if I can call it that, will live on the trademark register and in due course be fought out in court cases as to who truly is the true proprietor of that trademark, if anybody.
So it wasn't Legacy whatever, this Legacy something there's organization
a,
because...
There is an organization called Legacy Projects.
Yes.
And they filed an application to register the, let's me just call it the spear device, let's call it the Warrior logo.
Yes.
Of the Warrior with the spear and the shield.
Right.
And they filed an application for that in 2014, obtained a registration for it. That has subsequently been assigned, i.e. transferred, to the ANC. It was filed in class for category 41, which complicates matters a little bit because, generally speaking, as most of your regular listeners will know, trademarks are filed in different classes or categories depending on the goods or services of interest.
Yes.
And class 41 really isn't a core class for where political services fall. Political services fall predominantly in class 45, and then usually people also file a little bit broader. There are certain of the services that can go into 35, also 36. There are some of the stuff that can go into class 41, but this was filed with a particularly narrow specification. So that mark was assigned to the ANC. However, in this particular instance, for a variety of technical reasons, that didn't really assist them in the matter at hand. So to try and summarize it, earlier this evening when I was doing preparation, I wanted to jot down a couple of points, but quickly it ran into a couple of pages.
Yeah.
So let's just give the highlights for people that are not familiar. Yes. The judgments was only delivered late afternoon yesterday. So yeah. I read it late afternoon yesterday when it was delivered, and subsequently I read it again. There are some technical aspects where the court dealt with urgency, or rather the lack thereof. And please, the listeners must just bear with us here. It becomes slightly technical, but it's almost impossible to set the scene without just discussing a little bit about the points in limine, i.e. the points that was argued before we got to the merits.
Right.
As far as urgency is concerned, the court was basically of the view that the ANC created its own urgency to wait until this very late stage, as I say, essentially 30 days plus 31 days, I think is the exact time, away from elections, to bring an application that would essentially mean that the MK party, if they weren't able to use their name and their logo, would almost practically speaking make it impossible for them to contest the election. This matter, as you will recall, actually started in the middle of last year when the MK party applied to the IEC to be registered as a political party. And there's a variety of technicalities surrounding that and what the court said, what the ANC should have done and how they should have objected at that stage, etc., when time was still on their side. Mm. At the end of the day, we now find ourselves 30 days away from elections, and the court basically said that at this point in time, the threshold is not met for urgency to even hear the matter at all. So quite often when courts reach that conclusion, that is where they end at the end of the day. If you actually lose on urgency, the court is basically saying, I'm not hearing this matter because you haven't made out a case as to why everything else should be pushed aside and we should just listen to this matter.
Yeah.
In this particular case, the judge went quite a bit further and also dealt with issues relating to jurisdiction, i.e., did the High Court in Durban actually have the jurisdiction to make a pronouncement on the merits of this matter? And very briefly summarizing that, and without doing it justice, all of my colleagues and people in academia listening shouldn't be phoning in and telling me that the summary I'm giving is too brief.
Right.
But basically, as far as jurisdiction is confirmed, the court also found that this was a matter that the court believed should rather have been dealt with by way of a review and or an appeal on the side of the IEC and or the electoral court, that it falls within their purview. And although it was brought as a pure trademark infringement matter on the one hand and a passing off matter on the other hand. You can go, you can get trademark rights in one of two ways.
Yeah.
One way is to register it in terms of the Trademarks Act. Another way is to use it for a period of time, acquire a reputation over time in it, and that allows you then to have rights that are weaker or more limited than the ones you would get in terms of the Act, but they are broadly similar in terms of preventing a third party from making unauthorized use, and that's passing off, the ceremony of passing off, or rather the wrong of passing off. And the tests are not identical. The test for passing off is actually a little bit stricter. Passing off means that you must create the impression that your goods or services are those of another or connected with those of another. So that's quite a high bar. First of all, you have to prove that you have a reputation, of course, and then you have to prove that, which is quite difficult to do.
Right.
While an infringement for trademarks that are registered, broadly speaking, the test is unauthorized use in the course of trade and likelihood of confusion are essentially the elements that you have to prove, which is a lot easier. Yeah. So on the technical side, basically, the court came to the conclusion that on both those counts, that the ANC was non-suited, i.e. it didn't want to hear them on urgency because it didn't believe that the urgency, a case was made out for urgency. It also believed that it wasn't the correct forum to actually approach the High Court in this instance to adjudicate it, as it is a matter that should be adjudicated, for want of a better word.
These are what you call the points in limine.
Correct.
Right.
And those are just the points that are usually raised. The technical points, just a fancy Latin word for the points that are raised in the beginning before we get to the merits of the matter. And normally if the points in limine, if you are successful objecting and that somebody loses on urgency and somebody loses on lack of jurisdiction, generally speaking, the court will then say, we're not going to hear this matter any further as there is no need to. The court then in this particular instance decided not to do that, but to actually make a pronouncement on the merits, which isn't irregular. It is something that the court is entitled to do.
Yeah.
It's somewhat unusual, but given the time frame, of the judge basically took the view that pronouncing on the merits will, if it just waited for an appeal, then the Court of Appeal really would not have anything on the merits to make a pronouncement on.
Isn't that a contradiction in terms, though? I mean, if part of the points in limine are at least suggesting that there is no urgency, and then they proceed to give some sort of substantial sort of verdict, if you want to call it that, isn't that a procedural contradiction in terms?
It could be perceived that way. I think it's a lot depends on the matter at hand that one is dealing with. Just remembering that at the end of the day, I think the judge just wanted to make sure, because even let's use the jurisdiction argument. The court, this particular court may find it doesn't have jurisdiction, but on appeal, the Court of Appeal might come to a different conclusion. So in the normal course of events, the Court of Appeal could then refer the matter back to the court a quo, i.e. the previous court, and say, you do have jurisdiction, you must actually hear this matter. In this particular instance, though, where we're literally dealing with a matter of weeks, there simply isn't time to do all of that. And I think that is probably why the court took the decision to...
So if I understand you correctly, while the court could have taken the route of saying, look, there's no urgency here, so sorry, we're not going to listen to this. Am I hearing you to be saying that the court was sensitive and cognizant of the social, maybe even political ramifications of this, and therefore gave a substantial verdict on the basis of that?
I believe so. You know, that appears to be what one can glean from reading the judgment.
Right.
Of course, you know, I wasn't in court and I didn't see the underlying papers and affidavits and I didn't hear all the arguments.
Because what I'm understanding you to be saying is that under normal circumstances, once a court says, listen, there's no urgency here, And we don't have jurisdiction, then they wouldn't go into the substance of the matter at all.
Generally speaking, not. Right. And if we say a normal, let's call it a normal commercial dispute or any normal dispute, at the end of the day, because part of what you have to prove, as far as urgency is concerned, for example, is that you have to, that you will suffer irreparable harm. There's also something that's called the balance of convenience, which I will get to, as to why the ANC in this particular instance was not successful. So generally speaking, yes, when a court believes either there's no urgency or there's no jurisdiction, generally speaking, they will then not hear the matter on the merits.
Right.
But it's not irregular for them to, under circumstances such as these, to actually go ahead. And as you say, and the court mentioned in the judgment specifically, it is a matter that is of national importance. The election is impending. I mean, the ANC had already indicated, I don't know if this was, that was probably only after the judgment, but I know they have indicated that they are going to appeal.
Yeah.
I think the judge anticipated that an appeal is probably going to happen either way.
Yeah.
So the circumstances are somewhat unusual. And the High Court has got inherent jurisdiction that's quite wide. So, yes, a somewhat unusual way of doing it, but I don't think it was done in any way to advantage or disadvantage any particular party. I think it was done with a view to trying to resolve this matter, and I'll get to what I, my crystal ball gazing says to me, what is likely to happen between now and the election at the end of the day. And also just for the purposes in general that there is, it's very important aspects of law that needs to be clarified and vented. And the time frame is so short because once the election, to use an American expression, once the election has taken place, that is a bell that cannot be unrung at the end of the day. It's not as if a decision after the court, let me go one step back, courts, generally speaking, they do not give orders that are incapable of being implemented. So giving an order after the election saying that the MK party is not entitled to contest the election under the MK banner would be a moot point.
Sure.
It has already happened.
Sure.
So I think with that in mind is why this the judge took this particular tack, and correctly so, as in my humble opinion at the end of the day. It's not an irregular step, to the best of my knowledge. I'm not the world's biggest expert on civil procedure, but that certainly is my understanding just from what I read in the judgment.
Give me a sense then of the substantive issues that the court broached and what really was the argument that made this whole case go Umkhonto weSizwe's way.
So I think I'm going to just try and summarize that. This is where things get a little bit complicated and a little bit muddied.
Can I come closer to the
in terms of in terms of the outcome of the case and the arguments or the route that was followed to achieve that outcome. I think as far as the outcome is concerned, I think that the outcome is probably was to be expected. I was not surprised by the outcome and under the circumstances, and I'll elaborate now a little bit on it. I think that's the only outcome really realistically that one was looking at if you look at the underlying facts as they were presented in the judgment. As I say, I haven't seen the affidavits and I haven't heard the arguments, but just based on the judgment. So at the end of the day, the outcome, I think, was always likely to be this, and I'll explain why I take that view. On the technical side, as to some of the arguments advanced by both parties and some of the arguments advanced or some of the reasoning advanced by the court, I think there are still some question marks amongst legal scholars. I've had a chat to quite a few of my colleagues and fielded calls from them. And I think there are some question marks over the arguments advanced by both parties and the route followed by the court to get to this particular outcome.
Right.
And that's something that will play out in due course. But as far as the outcome is concerned, in a nutshell, in order to succeed, just going one step back, in an urgent application such as this, really the dispute is framed to a large extent on the papers, i.e. the case as it's put before the court. So just for people that are not familiar with court proceedings, You know, in motion proceedings, it's all done on paper. Yeah. I.e., there's no, it's not like a trial that you would normally see on television.
Yeah.
Where people
LA test, law kind of.
Yeah, where people yeah. testify, or even in South Africa, people mm-hmm. testify for months on end. There's cross examination. None of this happens, generally speaking, in motion proceedings.
Right.
So it's not as if every single thing has been ventilated to the max at yeah. the end of the day.
Yeah.
So the court makes a decision really on paper, as we would call it, and on paper the dispute was brought largely on two legs. The one was based on trademark infringement, based on that mark that was assigned, and the other one then was based on passing off. So the difficulty that the ANC faced was in practical terms, and not so much the argument that the court used, but in practical terms, the difficulties that they would face right from the start would be, for trademark infringement, one of the requirements is a likelihood of confusion. And you'll recall I said on the passing off side, one of the requirements is that a third party, or rather you would make a representation that a third party would then believe that your services in this instance are those of a third party. So MK services are those of the ANC, or they are connected to the ANC. So for the purposes of just keeping the discussion short and sweet, I'm just going to refer to both of those as likelihood of confusion, although that's not technically speaking the test for passing off. And likelihood of confusion really was always going to be difficult at the end of the day because of the nature of this dispute and how it's been basically dealt with and reported over and over in the media and the furore that it actually has caused. I think it's quite clear that it is very unlikely that somebody is going to be blunt, go in voting day into a booth and vote for the MK party, somehow mistakenly believing that they are voting for the ANC.
So if I understand you correctly, the prominence of this case, of this whole conversation around the antagonism between the ANC and the MK party has brought the very symbols that they use to such prominence that very few people would be able to argue that they can't see the difference between the two.
Correct. Okay. Ironically, that is exactly what has happened.
Yep.
In that the reasonable consumer, or in this case voter, because politics is a business, whether we like to yep. think of that or not,
yep.
Is postulated as being somebody of average intelligence, not particularly astute in looking at the fine detail, but also not particularly careless, etc., etc., the reasonable person test, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And under those circumstances, it's difficult to see, even allowing for the fact that in South Africa, we have a wide variety of people, you know, some may not even be literate at the end of the day. But even under those circumstances, I think it's a very difficult case to make, to say that given everything that has gone before and given that Jacob Zuma is linked so closely with the MK party, whether he'll be able to sit in parliament is a different question and the subject of a different matter.
Yeah.
But let's just assume for the time being that he is their lead candidate and Cyril Ramaphosa is the lead ANC candidate. It is extremely difficult to foresee a circumstance. It would be interesting to hear from your callers, but it's difficult for me to foresee a circumstance where a person would genuinely be confused as to who is who at the end of the day and who they are voting for. And coming back a little bit to, that's where the balance of convenience, when you bring an urgent application for an interdict at this stage to stop somebody, to stop the MK party from actually contesting under their name, the court really weighs two things and they say, if we give this interdict, it's one of the factors, but it's an important factor. If we give this interdict, what will the harm to the MK party be if we give it? And what would the harm to the ANC be if we don't give it? And on the balance of convenience in this particular matter, given the timeframes involved, the balance of convenience was always going to favor the MK party because the court basically said that in practical terms, if they had to deliver up all their posters, all the material, if they can't remove or obliterate the trademark, they have to destroy. Well, that was what was asked by the ANC, destroy the material, rebrand, you know, go and redo the application via the IEC to re-register under their new name and effectively campaign, to do all of this in the next 30 days, practically speaking, you would essentially be muzzling them out of partaking in a free and fair election. That would be the weight of what would happen if this interdict was granted.
Right.
On the ANC side, given that the court found that they do not believe that there's the likelihood of confusion, the downside is there's an ongoing trademark dispute that the parties can fight about to their heart's content and resolve at a later stage. But it weighs less on a balance of convenience as opposed to, and the court specifically made reference also to the right in the Constitution to partake in elections and the fact that the IEC actually allowed the MK party to be registered. Their name and what they were going to be campaigning under was advertised in the Government Gazette, as it should have been. The ANC didn't object at that particular stage, didn't really provide a good explanation as to why. And that all happened in the middle of last year. So if at that stage an objection was raised, there was still time to say, no, MK, you can't use this for a variety of reasons, if that's what the IEC or the electoral court wanted to find. You must pick a different name. But realistically speaking, to say to them at the 11th hour, you must now pick a different name, the harm would be substantially more than the harm as to, okay, we're going to run the election under these names. And as I say, the parties can fight about. The court didn't make a specific finding, because that was not in the papers in front of them, as to who actually finally has a bona fide claim to proprietorship, who owns the trademark, who doesn't own it, what about all the marks and the conflicting marks on the register. Those are all matters that can be resolved post the election without causing the amount of harm that MK would suffer if you said to them now, on an interdict basis, sorry, you can't use this in the election or the run-up to the election at all.
Give us a call. 011-883-0702 is the number to dial. 021-446-0567. My guest is Marius Gerber. He is the intellectual property specialist at Wits Incorporated. We're talking about the trademark war that MK and the ANC has gone through. No one is oblivious of the political sort of ramifications of such a conversation, but we're trying to really keep it legal. We're trying to keep it on the issues legal around this specific issue, so that we can understand the laws, the legal principles underlying it, for other, perhaps, situations. I think if I were to summarize what you're saying, I'd say the court did not want to get embroiled in the historical political issues. They wanted to stay on the argument, the technical argument around the Trademark Act of South Africa. They didn't want to get involved in the political shenanigans, the history and so forth. That, they argued, can be argued on another platform, right? The issue of jurisdiction was part of the points in Limine, I think. Limine. that they brought forward to say, listen, actually, we're not the court that you should be speaking to about this matter, because it has political and issues connected to the election. So actually what you guys should have done is gone to the electoral court. But while you're here, and the way that you framed the argument that you guys are going to have is purely on the basis of the issue of the logo and the trademark, right? And for that reason, yeah, we'll hear the case. Secondly, we're not sure that this issue is as urgent as all that, but we are aware that there's a national issue at play here, and that is the election that may have certain levels of instability for, I suppose, the peace, for order, right? We're going to entertain this case on that basis, right? as far as the arguments that were presented around whether or not somebody might confuse the MK logo with that of the ANC's Umkhonto and Sizwe armed wing, the court said no. The prominence of this case is such that there has been effective discrimination between the two cases, two organizations, to the point where the reasonable person, generally speaking, would not make the mistake of confusing the two. That for me is quite substantial, because they are making a specific verdict onto that specific issue. It's not yet, it's no longer procedural. It's no longer about procedural matters. It's now about the substantive matters of this particular case. So they're saying, no, we disagree with you, ANC. Nobody's going to get confused here. Two, you guys had enough time to intervene when, in the middle of 2023, this logo was gazetted. It was made public that there's an organization that's going to use this logo. It's going to use it. You did not do anything. And if we argue, or if we say that they can't use this particular logo, then we would be playing into the hands of politics. And at this stage, we as the court are staying and walking the very tightrope of interpreting all of this from a purely legal, technical point of view. We understand that there are going to be political ramifications, but as far as we're concerned, as the courts, we believe that you had time. And if we were to shut this down right now, we would be playing into the political game, right?
I think that's you get about a 9 out of 10 for that summary.
Great. I'm happy to accept a 9 out of 10.
The only thing I would just correct, it's not as if the ANC didn't do anything. The thing is that what they did in relation to the IEC, just to clarify that, is that when it was originally advertised, they didn't object.
Yep.
Then at a later stage, they did lodge an objection, and that objection wasn't upheld by the IEC.
Right.
And then there are further steps that one can take in going to the electoral court. I mean, that is a system that I'm not that familiar with, but there is an electoral court, and this court, the High Court here, specifically said that this is basically largely a political / electoral matter.
Yeah.
Even though it's presented just as a pure trademark matter in front of the court in Durban. In KwaZulu-Natal,
but it is actually
more of a political political angle that should be adjudicated by the electoral court, who is the designated court to deal with those type of matters,
and
for good reason.
Right, and I get the sense also that you're saying to me that the court basically said, look, the other technical issues can still be argued, right? They can still be argued the fight about whether or not this logo belongs to the ANC, to that other organization that you mentioned.
Legacy,
or to the MK. That can still be argued, right? You guys can still argue this issue, but for now, we don't think that it is as urgent as what you guys are suggesting that it is.
That part is more my commentary on it. The court didn't specifically say, look, you can go and argue these things in a different, over a different period of time or in a different forum, other than referring to the fact that what the ANC can and should have done is pursue the route. Why the route to involve the electoral court was abandoned by the ANC, it wasn't really disclosed in the papers, apparently, as far as the judgment is concerned. But what I'm saying is, it's more my commentary on it is, yes, the court has now made a pronouncement on the merits of the matter, but that is one judge sitting in the High Court in a provincial division. So there's a whole host or a whole route to take.
And the ANC has been very clear to say that to take this on
correct.
Appeal.
There's
right?
There's a whole route of appeals to take to go up to eventually to the Supreme Court of Appeal. Presumably, if you can show a constitutional angle, perhaps even the constitutional court. So this judgment doesn't, it does not close those avenues
sure.
as far as a further fight is concerned regarding the, let's call it, the true ownership of the trademark.
Should the ANC win? So what I'm gathering is that it's not a finish and claw matter here.
No.
There's still angles and avenues that the African National Congress can follow in appeal. But it appears that it's not a finish and claw matter. But in terms of whether or not the MK party will be able to participate in the elections under this logo, for now, we can probably surmise that they are going to be successful, I suppose, in terms of time, in competing in the elections under this particular logo.
It's still not finished and clear, to use your vernacular.
Yeah.
But once again, my commentary on that would just be, lawyers usually keep their crystal ball hidden away quite safely. But if I gaze into my crystal ball, even if they appeal the matter to a higher court, that court may have many things to say about the technicalities and how the court arrived at the particular judgment, et cetera. That remains to be seen. But I find it unlikely that a court where they can get in front of, whether that's in a couple of days or a week or 2 weeks, whatever the time frame may be, I find it difficult to see that even on appeal, and a court would come to a different conclusion, i.e. interdict the MK party with then essentially in the middle of campaigning with 3 weeks to go to say, no, you can't contest the elections under your current banner. You have to immediately cease all use and rebrand and basically redo everything. The balance of, given that this was an urgent interdict, it's appeal. Even if the matter is appealed, the balance of convenience is still not going to favor an approach like that from a court, which is difficult to see how they would come to that conclusion without having to run the risk that very significant, irreparable harm will come to the MK party, while the harm that could potentially come to the ANC is really premised on the fact that there is confusion and they will lose votes because people will inadvertently vote for the wrong party. And it's difficult for me to see how a court of appeal is going to come to a different conclusion as to the likelihood of that happening, because you will recall, you and I had this discussion several months ago on this matter. And I said at a certain stage, basically this whole matter is just giving legs to the MK party and giving them, it's giving them prominence that otherwise, if they were just called the Jacob Zuma party, they wouldn't have had this level of exposure that they now have.
Sure.
And that being the case, that keeps on chipping away at the argument that somehow people will be so confused that they would actually go and vote for the wrong party. And that is the only imminent danger or damage, rather, if I can call it that, that the ANC faces.
Got a couple of calls. Let's talk to Keith in Athol. Hi, Keith.
Evening, Aubrey.
Yeah,
and Marius.
Sure.
A question not related to this specifically, just registered trademarks. So in terms of the law, how long does this trademark last for? For example, I register a trademark, say, Aubrey's Bar and Grill, if you don't mind. And I trade for a few years and then close the restaurant and stop using the name. And a few years later, someone else opens a restaurant using the same name. Can they do this, considering I've registered this trademark, even though I'm not actively trading under the name?
Yes, that I can answer quite easily for you. The Trademarks Act makes provision that a trademark, generally speaking, once registered, is valid for 10 years. That is 10 years calculated from the date of filing once the mark is registered. It can be renewed every 10 years indefinitely, provided, and this is the proviso that's important for you here, that it remains in use. If a registered trademark has not been used for a period of 5 years or longer, it doesn't automatically become invalid, but it does become vulnerable to what is called expungement. Let's just clarify that. It means an attack by a third party. If you haven't used your trademark for 5 years, it's a registered, let's assume it's a registered trademark, And you haven't used it for 5 years because the non-use provision only relates to, it only starts running from the date of grant, the date that the certificate is granted. So if you haven't used it for 5 years, then I can bring an application to say I want that trademark kicked off the register based on the fact that you haven't used it for 5 years. So it's essentially use it or lose it. However, if you, let's say, don't use it for a six-year period, and then in year seven, without before anybody else starts using it or attacks your trademark, and you then recommence bona fide, i.e. use that's not made up just to stave off expungement proceedings, but genuinely you start using it again, then your use is use again, and the five-year period of non-use essentially is cured in inverted commas.
All right, let's take a call from Lekeng in Brakpan. Hi, Lekeng.
Yo, Aubrey.
Yeah, go for it.
Hello. Ah, to your guest as well.
Sure.
No, I just wanted to clarify something so that we all don't find ourselves in jail for contempt of court again.
Yeah.
The court has actually addressed the matter of who actually owns the trademark of Mkhando Wesizwe. They have actually said that the academics are the ones now who must do this. Now, when they say academics in court, they don't mean that colloquially. They are referring specifically to the professor at the University of KZN, to be specific, talking about jurisdiction. He is actually being ordered by the court to actually go to the library, bring out the module that tells us the answer to this question. So this is actually not something left hanging, because these are all parts of the same system. But because there's no time, I mean, the professors and the institutions, the court and the university are all part of the same UKZN jurisdiction.
All right. Lekeng in Brakpan. Is that the right interpretation of the...
No, unfortunately, that isn't the right interpretation at the end of the day. You know, the court didn't really go into the detail as to... One of the things you have to do if you want to be the owner of the trademark is show that you have a bona fide claim to proprietorship. And essentially, the court really didn't go into that question. And by that quote that I wrote,
yeah,
it is relevant to a certain extent. It's certainly relevant as far as your common law reputation is concerned. So the court hasn't made a final pronouncement as to Finnish and Klar who owns the trademark. Remember, this was an interim procedure. It was an application for an interdict, and the judgment was based on that. It's not a full-blown trial, if I can call it that, in terms of that made a final pronouncement as to either the ANC or the MK is, as you put it, Finnish and Klar, the owner of this trademark going forward. That matter was never really canvassed. It was merely a way of the judge basically saying he was not going to delve into the whole history, because it's a very complicated history, and he just wanted to deal with the matter that was in front of him, framed by the papers as they were presented to him and the arguments made in court to him, and not go outside of that and basically say, let me go into the whole history as to who is the true owner of the trademark, the legacy, whatever you might want to say.
Tony Satchel, Bratoni, good evening to you. Your thoughts?
Good evening, Braops and Marius. I get the sense, and that first and foremost, in the trial court's mind, was possibly the dire prejudice to the MK party and possible logistical difficulties with the IEC, which would necessarily outweigh that of the ANC. So my sense is that prejudice played a big role in the decision of the court, which makes sense under the circumstances.
Prejudice, huh?
Yes, and I agree with that. I think that trying to distill it, and just bearing in mind, it's a 42-page judgment, so there's a lot of stuff in there. But if you boil it down at the end of the day, I think really the two main things that stand out for me is, as you say, that's what I meant when I said balance of convenience at the end of the day, i.e. who stands to lose the most by, you know, a decision given at this point in time regarding an interdict on such short notice. That played an important part. And then the other thing that played an important part, also in the court's mind at least, was the fact that there isn't a likelihood in the court's view that there will be people that will be, that there'll be a significant number of people that will be confused to the extent that they will actually go and vote for the wrong party.
Does it matter which high court you choose? You know, if the MK, I mean, the ANC had, or whoever had decided that they're going to approach the high court in Gauteng, for example, would it have been a different matter?
No, not necessarily. Jurisdiction, just very briefly, is determined by facts. In this particular instance, any provincial division of the High Court has got jurisdiction to hear a matter on infringement such as this, provided that there is something else that also finds the jurisdiction. If it was just a fight about the validity of a trademark, you would have to go to the High Court in Pretoria because that's where the Registrar of Trademarks was. But in a matter such as this, usually the jurisdiction in that technical sense is determined by something else. And in this particular instance, I'm presuming that the MK party has their headquarters or they are physically present in KwaZulu-Natal, which is why the matter was brought there.
So the case would have been initiated by the MK party?
No, the case was initiated by the ANC. So you have to go where the defendant is, generally speaking, or the respondent in an application matter. And just to clarify, I see we're out of time, but just to clarify, the lack of jurisdiction the court was talking about wasn't geographical jurisdiction.
Sure, sure.
It didn't say, well, you shouldn't have gone to Durban, you should have gone to Pretoria. Yeah. The jurisdiction
but
issue.
My question is, and we'll have this conversation another time, is does it sometimes matter where the case is heard geographically, even though it is a matter of high court?
Unlikely under these circumstances, because it's usually determined, you know, sometimes you have a choice because there might be more than one court that has geographical jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, that doesn't really make a difference. The jurisdiction that the court was referring to was the jurisdiction issue regarding the electoral court versus the high court.
Marius Garba, intellectual property specialist at Wits Incorporated.